Welcome to the New Mind Creator Podcast, episode number 124, interview with Anissa Hudak. I'm your host, Maurice, the New Mind Creator. Remember to subscribe to my podcast so that you can receive alerts when new episodes are available each week on Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I ask that you support my podcast by pledging monthly or your one-time donation. Also, don't forget to share your favorite episodes. Please leave me a five-star review on iTunes. Follow me on LinkedIn and Twitter, Maurice Flournoy, and Facebook, New Mind Creator. Anissa's life has been intertwined with PTSD and trauma, also the military. Not only is she the daughter of a Vietnam veteran, she was also married to an active duty member for over 20 years. For 3 years, she volunteered at the Warrior Transition Battalion at Fort Riley, Kansas, providing yoga therapy, meditation, and other holistic treatments to the soldiers, family members, and staff. After seeing others struggle and having her own personal struggles with trauma and PTSD, she was inspired to create the Trauma Healing Yoga Therapy Program. As a yoga therapist and the founder of the Trauma Healing Yoga Therapy Program, she worked with women who have been sexually traumatized to help them heal their PTSD and other trauma-related issues. With yoga therapy, as a two-time rape survivor, she intimately understands the needs these women face and help them navigate their healing journeys. So, Anissa, what are your favorite types of dishes to prepare?
Well, I was raised in a predominantly Italian home, and so Italian is kind of my forte. But I also just love, you know, good old-fashioned stick-to-your-ribs kind of meals. But I also kind of follow the Mediterranean diet, so there's a lot of that influenced in my cooking as well.
So do you remember how old you were when you began cooking? Because I remember how old I was. I was about 8 years old when I began cooking, and I started cooking pancakes. So that was kind of easy, batter and so forth. And it just evolved from there.
Well, I was two when my mother started me making, baking in the kitchen. And I had the opportunity to not only cook with my mom, but also my grandmothers. And so I learned so much from my grandmothers as well that, you know, it's really such a special thing for me to think back on that I had that time with them. And I'm one of 21 grandchildren on my mom's side. And out of all the grandchildren, I'm the only one who knows how to make grandma's meatballs.
Whoa. Get out of here. Did she share a secret ingredient with you that the others don't have?
Maybe it's love. I'm not sure. But, and there's no recipe. You have to watch me make them because it's not written down.
Oh, wow. You must have been observing your grandmom and just have some instinctive things that you know what to do.
I actually come from a family of restaurateurs. So it is kind of in the blood. And still to this day, I have cousins who work in restaurants and what have you. So, it's kind of in the blood, but you have to watch. And I watch them do it so often that, it just becomes instinctive.
Wow. So during the holidays, do you all get a chance to get together as a family and make traditional dishes?
We don't get together as a family, but we do have our traditions. As Italians, we do. Our big holiday is actually like Christmas Eve instead of Christmas Day. And we do a traditional seven fish feast. So it's seven different fish served with pasta.
What?
Yeah.
Wow. That sounds amazing. Seven different fish. Do you have a favorite?
Well, I'm always partial to shrimp, but sometimes we get, super extravagant and have lobster, and that's always a crowd pleaser. But it's we have seafood and we have fish, and there's no meat allowed that entire day. And it's just a big, I mean, we cook for hours and hours, and within 25 minutes, it's gone. But it's the most special day of the year.
Yeah. So did you, when you grew up, were you singing in a church or were you just singing around the house?
Singing around the house and in school, I went, I guess since third grade, I started. And I sang all the way up through high school. I was in competitions and I was pretty much being trained for opera and to be able to go to college when I walked away from all of it.
Wow, that's interesting because opera is definitely a real specialty. You have to have an interesting voice to pull that off. Do your parents or anyone in your family sing as well?
My grandfather used to be in a barbershop shop quartet. My uncle used to sing in choirs. So again, it's in the family. My parents don't sing though. And, you know, I was in special choirs in school. We had all different kinds of, you know, choirs. And I did all of that. And again, with the competitions. And then in my senior year, my teacher really wanted me to go to college for singing, for voice. And it's just not anything I wanted. For me, it was an outlet. And I didn't want the lifestyle that came with being an opera singer. And so I just walked away from it.
Wow, so you had a chance, but it was just an outlet for you. You didn't really want to continue. So what is the lifestyle like for an opera singer?
Well, you know, I thought that I knew at that age what it was. I probably had really no clue. You know, I can only imagine that there's lots of touring and I'm not sure if you're in any one place for any given amount of time. And I really wanted to have a family. And I enjoyed cooking so much. I actually wanted to be a chef. So, you know, singing was really not on my radar.
So how long have you been working with women who have survived rape and sexual assault?
Well, probably a good 5 years now. When I started actually teaching and having, you know, an actual studio location and working with women. I've worked with the military. There were some women that were also in the military that were dealing with that. And so I would say a good 5 years, if not more.
So I know you have been a victim of rape twice. Can you talk a little about how those experiences shaped you or altered your life?
Well, they certainly altered my life, that they've also made me the person that I am today. My first rape occurred when about 28 years ago. And so I've had a long time to kind of sit with it. My most recent rape was about 3.5 years ago. And I'm still working through that. I have a therapist that I speak with. And you know, I'm still dealing with the fallout from that. That being said, how has it affected me? It's obviously affected my relationships with other men, my weight, my relationship with myself, my relationship with others when I told them that this happened and they didn't believe me. You know, it has a ripple effect. It doesn't just occur to the woman or to the man or, you know, to whomever the victim is. There's a rippling effect. And it affects all of these other relationships within your life.
So I'm really sorry to hear about, you know, that happening to you. And just hearing you talk about people not believing you, I couldn't imagine what that would even feel like. So what was the process or what has the process been like, the journey to overcome those two traumas?
Well, quite frankly, my mat saved my life. I guess it was about 5 years ago, I started taking teacher trainings for yoga. And my husband at the time was active duty. The company that I was going through was offering classes that would teach about, you know, veterans and PTSD. And I was like, gosh, you know, we live right outside of Fort Riley, Kansas. We've been military for, you know, 15, 18 years at that point. You know, we have a lot of military friends. We have a lot of people who are, you know, coming back from deployments. I live in the belly of the beast. I should take these classes so I can understand more and be able to help people. And so I got in my first class, and I was halfway through the first day, and I realized the first person I really needed to work on was me before I could help others. I noticed how the PTSD had really crawled into the nooks and crannies of my life and was holding me back from doing things. And I didn't want that. And here I thought I had a really good handle on my PTSD, and I realized, maybe not so much. And I really credit my mat with saving my life, because it's been, it's my biggest confidant. I can tell it anything, and it doesn't judge me, and it doesn't not believe me. It has given me so much. And to be able to share that with other people, other women like me, and help them find that peace, even if it's just for an hour that they're on that mat, you know, it makes the 23 other hours of the day a little bit more bearable.
So I know were your parents a part of the military?
My dad did a 1 year stint in Nam.
Okay, your dad. And did he develop any PTSD or anything? Or
absolutely.
He did.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And
how, you know, it kind of created a little bit of chaos at times in our household. Now that I'm a clinician and I understand it, you know, looking back on it, it's like, oh my gosh, this poor man was carrying these heavy, heavy burdens, came back at a time when his country didn't want him back. The VA wasn't really there for them. And this poor man struggled for all these years. Just in the last 3 to 5 years has he been able to get with the VA, get into therapy, and he's been really releasing some of these demons.
Wow. And Vietnam was in the 1960s, right? Or 70s?
Yes, 60s, 70s, yeah.
And all of these years, he's only now began to find some relief. That sounds like it had to have been a difficult time for him and family members, you know, you all who loved him as well, to see him go through those things and not even really know at the time what was going on.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So why did you choose yoga to become a part of the equation to be able to even help victims recover and help yourself?
Well, I wanted to do yoga for myself. I had no aspirations of ever teaching. I just didn't want to have to go to a class on somebody else's schedule. And so I wanted to learn how to do yoga because I wanted to keep myself safe and I wanted to do it on my own time. And I took my first class and I went for the first day, and then I came home and I said, I can't do this. There's just no way. And my husband's like, sleep on it. Just, you know, give it a chance. And I got up the next morning and he's like, are you going to go back? And I said, I don't know. He's like, you paid for it. Go back, you know? And so I did. And I realized that for me, yoga was a gift. And it wasn't that I was teaching people. I was really just sharing this beautiful gift. And when I changed my perspective, I was like, oh, I can do this. And yes, I really do want to do this. And so I finished the class. And again, I had no aspirations of ever teaching on the outside. I just wanted to do it for me. And within a month, I had 2 job offers. And I said, oops, I think the universe is trying to tell me something. And there I was. I started teaching yoga on the outside in studios.
Oh. And how about meditation? How long have you been practicing that?
I've been practicing yoga and meditation for over 10 years on my own, well before I started teaching.
So what caused you to go in that direction? Because it's so much easier to possibly take medication to numb pain and to alleviate pain and to do other things. What caused you to go that direction?
Well, we were stationed at Fort Leavenworth. And so this was 13 years ago, plus or minus. And my girlfriend and I joined a gym. And we would go every morning to the gym. And they started offering yoga classes. And I had always wanted to take one. And so I bugged her enough. And we went to one. And we fell in love. And we would go to every class that they offered. And after the year was over, I moved to Fort Riley. She moved to Fort Campbell. And, you know, I was here with two little ones. I had two young boys. My husband had left on a deployment. I mean, I was here literally in the middle of America with no family, no friends. And so I didn't really get out to go to a yoga class. And it wasn't until several years later did I have the opportunity to take a class so I could do it on my own. And that's really what prompted me, was just that I was with my bestie and we went, and that was the end of it. We just fell in love with it.
Wow, that's interesting, because yoga looks interesting, and it looks like it would be beneficial just for stretching and elongating those muscles. You know, as you get older, definitely it's beneficial as well. But I love meditation. I do that often. But I'm definitely going to try yoga at some point as well, because I know it's a form of meditation as well, I would say.
It is. It's considered a moving meditation. And actually, yoga was created to help prepare the body for meditation. Mm-hmm. And so generally, I will do my own personal practice, you know, during the day. And then right after my practice, I go into meditation.
So how long do you think you dedicate to those, to yoga and then your meditation per day?
It may not be every day, depending on my week and my workload. But, you know, if I'm lucky and I get the time, I love to usually do an hour and a half. Sometimes it's 45 minutes, and sometimes I get the full hour and a half. It really all depends on the day, and it also depends, you know, everybody thinks that yoga is the postures, is the poses and moving. Yoga is about release, and there are some days where I literally am lying on my mat just crying. And that's considered yoga, because I'm releasing.
I had no idea about that. That's pretty interesting to know. And you are the founder of the Trauma Healing Yoga Therapy Program. Could you talk a little bit about that program? It sounds like really interesting to me.
Well, thank you. It's been a journey. You know, watching others struggle, my own struggles, and really thinking about, okay, you know, what is out there to help people? And what I've done is I really work specifically now with women who are like me, who have, you know, survived some sort of sexual trauma. But I have had the opportunity, I've worked a lot with military, which are always, I have to tell you, the military guys, especially the guys, are a lot of fun, because they come in usually for their first class and they're like, oh, I'm going to get some good stretching in and maybe a nap or, you know, whatever. And then afterwards, they're like, oh, my goodness, this is tremendous. And then they come back week after week after week. But, you know, it's always that initial when they come in, they think that, you know, these big burly guys, they're just going to do some little yoga and then move on with their day. And they're really totally blown away with what they get from it. So that's always been a lot of fun. Working with women who are like me, is really special for me because, you know, I walk the walk every day, and to see them come in and be whatever they're processing, whatever they're dealing with. And, you know, we get on the mats and we work it out. And afterwards they say, I feel lighter. Or they say to me, I was on the mat and the answer came to me. Whatever it is, you know, the peace and the calm that they receive, that's better than any money anybody can pay me. And I have the best job in the world. I love what I do.
So do you know where yoga originated?
India.
Yeah. So I know it seems like for whatever reason, over the last decade or so, more Americans have been getting into yoga and meditation, at least mentioning it more. Have you found that to be true as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So how long did it take you to create your program?
Well, you know, I think it's always ever evolving to try to meet people's needs. I did have an actual local studio where I worked out of, and you know, I found that people just weren't really coming in, whether it was they didn't want to be seen going into that type of a class or what have you. And I live in a smaller town. I live in Manhattan, Kansas. My husband has now retired, and we're just kind of waiting for our boys to finish high school. And so, I live in a town where the livestock outnumbers the people.
Wow.
So I wanted to be able to reach more people. And so I've moved everything online. And so that's what I've been currently doing, is working on moving everything online and having programs where women have access to yoga therapy 24/7. You know, because at 3 o'clock in the morning when you wake up and your mind is racing, I may not be available, but you might be able to, you know, log in and take a class with me that's been recorded, or hear my voice on a yoga nidra or meditation. Just know that somebody is there. We have, a Facebook group. It's 24/7. People have access to that as well. And so, you can never tell when PTSD is going to flare up. And so this gives women, 24/7 access to help.
So do you recommend your program also to be a part of the equation? For instance, would you recommend a person be in their mental health therapy as well, along with your program, or just stick to your program?
I would never tell anyone to just do my program. That is not wise. I totally wholeheartedly suggest that people be seeing a mental health therapist, counselor, social worker, whatever kind of professional they, resonate with. I do. I absolutely see a therapist. And I would also recommend that if there's a need for medication, absolutely. I take a medication. A mental health medication, and there's no shame, and there's nothing wrong with it, and better living through chemistry.
In what ways do you think family members and friends can help support victims of rape and abuse?
I think the best thing that family members and friends, if they've never had the experience, I think the best thing that they can say is, I don't completely understand what you're saying, but I'm here for you. And sometimes it's not about words. Sometimes it's just being there, holding someone's hand, making them a cup of tea or whatever it is. But, just being there speaks volumes.
So it's not. I'm sorry. Continue.
No, go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was getting ready to say so the family and friends don't necessarily have to have the answers. They just need to be there.
Absolutely. And of course, believing is a big portion of it. It's really hard when we have those close to us who don't believe us when we say this has happened. And it really destroys a lot of relationships when that happens. So, you know, when you think of family members and friends, you think of people who would be willing to protect you. And here you've been in a situation where you haven't been protected, and you want those close to you to protect you. And when people say that they don't believe you, that really damages that relationship. And so, you know, knowing all of the facts is one thing, but telling someone you don't believe them is another. And so maybe waiting till you get all the facts before you say you don't believe or you believe, but just, especially initially, just be there with them.
Yeah, that sounds like something definitely loved ones and families could possibly do. Just hearing information from someone who has experienced something is helpful, because I think just sometimes people just don't know what to do. They're caught like a deer in the headlights. But then if a person, you know, of course, says they don't believe you, that's something totally different versus being there as a support.
So. I think it's a knee-jerk reaction. You know, we certainly don't want that to happen to any of our loved ones. And so we're apt to say, no, that couldn't have happened. And instead of saying that, you know, instead of having that knee-jerk reaction, just take a breath. And then be, you know, just there for them and let the whole thing unfold, because it's going to peel away like an onion. There's a lot of layers to it. And then at some point you can make a decision. Did this really happen or did this not? But quite frankly, if this woman feels that for whatever reason she was touched inappropriately, then there's an issue.
True. Yeah, and now I guess as we, as a society, as we continue to evolve together, there's so many things that has happened over the years that as a whole, we just haven't been really abreast of society. You know, and men now coming out, talking about their traumas, and it's looked on over the years as something men didn't talk about. But now, through the evolution, men are even talking about those same things. So it's good that people who are not victims just give them that ear and be able to be a support system for them. So where did you grow up?
I am originally from New York.
Oh, what part of New York were you born?
I was actually born in Jersey, and then my parents moved to New York, and I lived there for 20 plus years, and we lived about an hour out of the city. I actually grew up on a mountain. You know, people don't think that New York has mountains, but we do. There, I used to go cow tipping.
What?
And, yeah, I used to go cow tipping, and it was beautiful. We would always go into the city or into Jersey, because that's primarily where the rest of my family lived. So I spent a lot of time in the city and in Jersey, but I grew up on a mountain. And then I married my husband and we lived all over the country.
Wow. Because I have family in New Jersey and New York, so that's one of my favorite places to visit. Like, New York is just unlike any other city. It's like the city has a heartbeat. You know, as soon as you get there, I mean, you can just feel the energy of that city. So,
you know, it's really funny. Whenever we go back, my boys say it's like a light switch, and I'm a very different person. I move differently. My body language is different. I talk different. You know, I'm like a totally different person, and they laugh because they're like, "Who are you?"
He says, "It's not that woman that lives in Manhattan,
Kansas.
I've never heard of Manhattan, Kansas before.
Listen, if I had a dollar for every time I've heard, "Oh, you left the Big Apple for the Little Apple," I would not be doing yoga, let me tell you.
So you went from cow tipping in New York to cow tipping in Kansas.
Yeah, but I have to say, I do feel like a fish out of water here. It's very different. When we first moved here, we were at the mall, and my son, he was about five. He looked at me, and he said, there's another little boy over there, but he looks like he's dressed for Halloween. And he had on a hat and Wranglers and boots. And I said, no, honey, he dresses like that every day. He probably lives on a ranch.
Yes, a different, I guess Kansas is considered the Midwest, right? So,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure it's much, much different than, city life for sure. Yeah.
I live 2 hours from a Macy's, and to me, this is just unheard of.
2 hours?
Yeah.
Wow. I guess there's a lot of room for meditation and reflection being in that area.
Yes, we'll go with that.
Yeah, I know some people prefer raising kids and families outside of, not hours and hours outside of the city all the time, but just a little space. So, you know, it's a distance away from all of the city life to raise families.
It has been the best place to raise our boys.
Really?
Absolutely, hands down. Wouldn't think twice about it doing it again. I miss my family and friends back home. But no, for raising my boys, this has been an absolute dream.
Great. So are you working on any new projects?
Well, I'm going to be launching a membership, which is this 24/7 access for women. And that'll be here in 2020. I'm still working, putting on the finishing touches. But in the meantime, there is a Facebook group that women can join. And it's called Women Surviving to Thriving. And it's really geared for the woman who, has had some sort of sexual trauma. And some time has passed, it's not like she, this happened just last Tuesday, because she really can't hear anything at this moment, let alone, yoga and what have you. So this is somebody who's probably a good 3-6 months, down the road, if not, 10 years, 20 years, whatever. Maybe they've tried different methods of, talk therapy, maybe medication, and some other things, and just feel like, there's got to be more to healing. And there is, talk therapy is great. Medication is wonderful. But we, as humans, we store trauma in our bodies. And in order to really find everlasting peace, we need to release that trauma from our bodies, and we hold it on a very cellular level. And so what we found is that with this type of yoga, we're able to really help people release emotions, release the trauma that is stored in the body. And so they can find that peace that they're craving.
So once the trauma is released from their bodies, do they have to replace it with something, or they're just free of it?
They are free of it.
So they are free of it. So, okay, that's interesting, because once it's out of the body, does that affect the mind state as well? Or how does that work?
Absolutely. I mean, the mind and the body are one. We here in the West think of them as two different things, but let's be real. It's all connected. And when we are able to release emotion from our bodies, trauma from our bodies, it gives us more bandwidth. And with that bandwidth comes peace, some tranquility, some serenity. We're able to take a breath, and we're not reacting as quickly. A lot of us with PTSD, we react, we don't respond. And when you release the trauma from your body, you have more of an option of responding than just reacting.
So could you explain the difference between reacting and responding?
Well, reacting is your knee-jerk, 2-second response to something. And, you don't think about it. You just do it. There's no thinking involved. When you respond, you've given it some thought. You've taken a breath. There are several more seconds in that time from when you find something out to when you actually respond. And I'm talking maybe 5 to 10 seconds, maybe even more. But you allow yourself the opportunity to process what you've heard, and you've actually listened instead of just hearing something and shooting off a response. You know, a lot of us, even when we talk, we aren't really listening. We're just thinking of what we're going to say next. And we're only half hearing what the other person is saying. And that's kind of reacting. That's not really responding to someone. But responding is taking a moment, processing what's been said, and responding in a way that's genuine and authentic.
So the key is key in you helping people release that trauma within their body, so it's not just this automatic thing that they're continually reliving. But once they release it, then they can begin to respond more appropriately.
To everything in their life.
Yes.
Absolutely, to everything in their life. And it's really interesting to see people be able to get more bandwidth once they release that trauma. And, you know, every time they get off that mat and they say to me, I feel lighter. I feel brighter. I feel like I could float out of here. You know, it's so amazing how much we store in our bodies and don't release. And then how much more peaceful and how they live in that peace afterwards. That's the beautiful thing, is to watch them then live in that peace.
Yeah. So how long, I know each person is different, and, you know, and even introducing something different like yoga and meditation, how long does it generally take for a person to release that trauma within their body, or at least begin the process of doing it when they begin to see change?
You know, a lot of people, I tell everybody to at least go to 5 sessions. I think 5 sessions is a really good benchmark, because you kind of find out, do you like the instructor? A lot of yoga classes, do you like your instructor? If you don't like the person who's guiding the class, then you're not really going to like the class. So one, you want to like your instructor. Number two, 5 classes gives you a chance to really get into it and see, do you see any kind of a difference? Some people say to me, I felt a difference after my first class. Some people said, you know what, it really did take me the 5 classes. And the way I look at it is, you know, if somebody doesn't want to come back to my class, that's okay. I hope that they're able to find a class with someone else that meets their needs. And that's why there's different instructors and there's different types of classes. It's all about meeting a need. My class is very different than a very fitness-based class. Fitness-based yoga is really big right now, and that's great. And you can get an incredible body workout through a fitness-based yoga class. But if you think of yoga as a big pie, yoga therapy is kind of a slice of the pie. And within that slice, we all have different specialties. So for instance, I work with trauma, PTSD, and TBIs, traumatic brain injuries. I know women and other men actually who are specialties. They do cancer, yoga for cancer, yoga for arthritis, yoga for MS, yoga for Parkinson's, yoga for seniors. There's all different types of yoga within that yoga therapy slice. And so I would say, you know, if you're suffering with trauma and you want to find someone local to you, there's a website you can go to. You can find a local yoga therapist to work with you on that. It's called the it's IAYT, International Association of Yoga Therapists.com. And you can look up and see if there's someone local to you. or for any of those other specialties. What you're going to get in those classes is different than what you're going to get in a fitness-based class. You will get a full body workout, but it's going to be very, very different. Now, in my class, I do a lot of body-brain work. What happens with trauma is that our brain becomes offline with the rest of our bodies. And so we really need to help reestablish that connection between the body and the brain. And so I do a lot of work with that, along with working with specific muscle groups in the body that actually hold on to the trauma. It's all very scientific, and everybody thinks that yoga is, you know, new age, woo, woo, you know, and it's actually all science-based, and that's what nobody understands. It's all science. It's all black and white. It's very clinical, actually.
What are some muscle groups that store trauma?
Well, have you ever heard of the psoas muscle?
It sounds familiar, but I don't...
Okay, well, you might know it by its regular name, the hip flexor.
Yes, definitely heard of hip flexor.
Okay. Well, it is the deepest muscle of our body. And quite frankly, in my eyes, it is the most important muscle that you have.
Really?
I think it is. And because, have you ever been sick or injured and you, your body has immediately curled itself up into the fetal position?
Yes.
Okay. So we do that in order to protect all of our inner organs in the trunk area. So the lungs, the heart, the liver, all of that, right? It is those two little muscles, they're not little, those muscles in our pelvis that actually create that function of curling up into the fetal position. And so without those muscles, you would not be able to protect all of those vital organs.
Wow. Okay.
Now, the other thing that this muscle, these two little muscles do, we call it the psoas. It also holds all of your emotion. So your happiness, your joy, your frustration, your anger, your grief, all of it, it's all stored in your hip flexors. And so there is an actual pattern to how we are able to really warm up all of these muscles that are attached to this, the hip flexor region. We have to do it in a very particular way to warm up all of these other muscles so we can really then dive really deep into that muscle because it's such a deep muscle and we have to warm it up. And what we do is then we work it to exhaustion. When we work it to exhaustion, it releases. Some people say to me, Anissa, my thighs are shaking. My thighs are like jelly. Some people say I don't feel anything at all, but they do feel lighter. So you may or may not feel it happening, but that trembling, that shaking, that's what we want, because that's when we know the muscle is releasing. Again, people may not feel it. And because the brain and the body aren't online together, it might be happening and they don't even feel it. So there's a couple of different things going on. So if you go to a class like what I'm talking about and you say, well, I didn't shake, that's okay. It still probably happened in its own way. But that's how we release that muscle.
That's interesting. Definitely interesting. So once you release that muscle, then it gets rid of that inhibition. Well, that I could say like radio signals, they get hindrances, so it's not clear. So you get that clarity with that muscle being released and then the brain, and then they synchronize themselves at some point, I guess.
Yes, we are able to help reset the central nervous system and then everything comes back online. What's really interesting is that, you know, in my classes, generally people have little releases. There is an actual psoas release thing that you can do. It you know, it takes about 8 minutes. It's pretty intensive. I have done it myself. I have done it with some of my clients. It is not something that as soon as somebody walks through the door, they're like, oh, let's do this. We don't know that. That does not happen. You know, there are clients that I've worked with for over 3 years that I still haven't done this with because they're just not ready. It takes a lot. There's a lot that goes into it and there's a lot that comes out of it. The first time I ever released my psoas, had a total release, I cried for hours, sobbed, absolutely sobbed for hours.
Wow, that's powerful.
It is incredibly powerful. The next time I did it, I felt like I was floating. I was just on cloud nine. And I remember the third time I did it, I shook for the entire day. My whole body shook for the entire day. So it's very powerful. And again, this is all science-based. This is not new age woo-woo kind of stuff. Like, you know, this is all science-based.
Wow, yeah. I think more people need to do it. And I don't think everybody, like some people who have had trauma in their lives, I don't know if they even, you know it as an option, you know? So it's good that you're being able to speak about it and others who are doing it too, to really give more voice to it. And hopefully more people will begin to do it because it's definitely a natural thing, which we all can use natural stuff within our lives.
Absolutely. And I don't think that anyone really knows that it's an option. You know, our military has been using it now for the last, I would say, 7 to 10 years. And they're finding great results with it. And I think that that's probably one of the biggest things that has helped get the word out that we can do this for people. But yeah, it's totally an option and it's very natural and it's wonderful. And I mean, I know for myself, it has truly saved my life.
Nice. So do you have a website or social media if someone wanted to contact you?
Well, let's see. I am at traumahealingyoga.com. And I am all over social media like a bad penny. I just keep showing up. I have, you know, I'm on Facebook. Again, Trauma Healing Yoga. Instagram, Trauma Healing Yoga. Pinterest, Trauma Healing Yoga. Twitter, actually by my name, Anissa Hudak. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm everywhere.
Wow, nice. And it's easy to find, Trauma Healing Yoga. So that's a good theme, good branding.
Thank you.
Yes. So before we end, this is a question I ask all of my guests, and that is, what's your one to grow on? What piece of valuable information would you like to leave our audience with today?
One to grow on. You know, I think living by the golden rule, and that is, if you don't have anything nice to say, then don't say anything at all. I think we live in a world where people feel like they can just sprout out with their opinion any old time. And there's a time and a place for everyone's thoughts and opinions. And then there are times when there's not. And I think we need to get better filters.
Thank you for listening to The New Mind Creator Podcast with your host, Maurice, The New Mind Creator. This podcast has been sponsored by Abundant Sports and True Serum. Head over to www.mauriceflournoy.com to receive more motivation and insight to help create your new mind.